Manchester City's substitutions have worked wonders here. Take a bow, Gareth Taylor. This one's going to extra time. And Kerr on the charge here. Has Fleming with her. Sam Kerr goes for goal. Finds the goal. Chelsea lead again.
Tsimikas for Liverpool. And wins it for Liverpool. A nerveless penalty. No wonder he's off and running.
For Bernardo, Blackwood wants it. Bernardo still going. Oh, he's wrong-footed Berrigini. And the 18-year-old, whose dad was a legend at Adelaide United, has secured them surely safe passage to the semi-finals.
It is the global game here on SEN on a Tuesday night. We are reaching the pinnacle of all seasons of football around the world. The A-League coming into its finals, as we've just heard tonight. Into the semi-final stage. The EPL is reaching its final day. The Championship in England as well, as we find out who will be promoted into the Premier League for next season. We've had the FA Cup finals over the weekend. The Champions League will continue on into its final stages as well, with the women's final this week and the closing stages of the men's competition to come in the weeks ahead, and the final not far away at the end of the month. And so much more on the agenda tonight on the Global Game. Jordan Kanellis and Roddy Vargas with you tonight in place of Simon Hill and Alex Brosk. We've got big shoes to fill, Roddy.
Oh, my. You shouldn't have told me that. I didn't know we were filling those shoes. I can be Broski. You can be Simon Hill.
Oh, my goodness. I haven't got off to a good start because I'm not a Man City fan, so I've got to pretend to be a Man City fan to fill his shoes. You can tell it's a Simon Hill show with that intro as well.
Yeah, can you play in a rock band? He plays in a rock band.
I know, the heavy metal intro. Yeah. Might be more Surge's go out tech here. The global game, so on the agenda tonight, we'll have a chat to Paul Williams in the second hour to chat all things Asian football. Michelle Escobar from Optus Sport to cover off on what's been happening in the women's game with the FA Cup final on the weekend just gone, with Sam Kerr being the star there, scoring two goals in the win for Chelsea to make it a double for Chelsea this season, and also the UEFA Champions League women's final this upcoming weekend. And Spencer Pryor will join us off the top of 10 p.m. to recap what's been happening in the English game. But Roddy, there's been plenty happening in the football. What's taken your fancy? We've done A-League, we've called tonight's game, and there's been plenty happening there. But around the world, what was the thing that's what's taking your interest the most?
Sam Kerr. Every time I see her do something amazing, it's like she's done it again. And, you know, and it's great to see all the news reels, and I'm on social media. I'm not a social media junkie, but it's all the memes and all the different TikToks and, you know, what she's doing, and she does it so regularly, it's unbelievable. And you talk about Ballon d'Or and the best player. And for me, for someone that scores the kind of goal she does on a regular basis is like, that's special. You know, she just doesn't do it one off, but she's a match winner. She scores amazing goals that, you know, just as good as any other man has done, or you won't see any better goal. That she scored two on the weekend for Chelsea. Both were fantastic. She ends up scoring the winner, albeit a deflection, but she's that player that she's always there. She's the impact. She's a headline maker, and I think she's been fantastic. I know I've got two young daughters, and they love watching the Matildas, and, you know, maybe one day they'll follow in her steps, but, you know, they love watching the women play, and Sam Kerr is someone they know, and they were collecting stickers, and Sam Kerr was there, so she's just been an icon for our game in women's football.
Yeah, you sort of think, when is it, not that we want it to, but, like, because she's so consistent, you think, when is it going to stop, or when is she going to hit the crest of the hill and start coming down the other side? But she just never does, because she's that consistent. She's such a professional. You know, every athlete at some point will hit that crest, and they will end up, you know, tailing away into the twilight of their career. And she's not about to retire anytime soon, by the way. But you just think, you know, she is that consistent and playing that well for so long. That's what separates decent players from great players. She's a great player.
It does, and she kind of reminds me of a Timmy Cahill in the sense that Timmy didn't just score the basic tap-ins. You know, he was one that scored scissor kicks and goals from the halfway line, his first goal for City. And Sam Kerr's not one to score the simple and do the basic stuff, you know. I'm sure she's quite capable, and she's worked so hard at her profession to make it where she has, but she's always doing the spectacular, and she's just got a knack of you know, creating just amazing moments, playing, whether it's for the Matildas or for Chelsea now.
If you want to get involved on tonight's show, you can by calling us. It's a different number. So because Roddy and I are here in Melbourne after tonight's A-League clash, we've got the Melbourne lines. Normally, Simon and Broski are hosting from up in the SEN Sydney studios. So different phone number from a different location, but you get the same result by joining us on the program. 1300 736 736 is the number to call. So that's a known number to our Melbourne audience, but to the Sydney siders who might be listening or anyone else around the SCN network in Australia, 1300 736 736, or you can send us a text on 04 33 98 1116. That's 04 33 98 1116 to get involved for tonight. Roddy, our starter for five big topics. I'll put number two to number one because we've just been talking about her. Sam Kerr. So the Ballon d'Or is the most prestigious award over in Europe. Goes to the best player for that year. Is she the front runner for the women's Ballon d'Or this season, or is there someone else?
Oh, I'd be giving it to her. Based on what I said, based on the amount of spectacular goals she scored, it's not a one-off. You know, she's capable of anything, and, you know, she's had success everywhere she's gone, you know, with her national team, now at Chelsea. You know, and players like her come into different teams and different groups and breed success. And I think she's a perfect example of someone that should be winning the Ballon d'Or.
Yeah, she's been the victim of being snubbed from awards in the last couple of years.
Yep.
You know, a lot of people thought she should have made teams of the year or one player of the year here and there, but she's been winning more of those awards now. And obviously the Golden Boot is one that she earns herself for the top goal scorer. And she's been winning a handful of those, both in America a couple of years ago and now, you know, move to the Women's Super League in England. So her biggest challenge will be Alexa Putellas, who is the star for Barcelona, who won it last year, the Ballon d'Or, and she'll be playing in the Women's Champions League final this weekend when Barcelona take on Lyon from France, who Ellie Carpenter plays for, the Aussies. So there'll be an Aussie in the Women's Champions League final this week, but Alexa Putellas is an absolute star. So that'll be maybe the biggest challenge to Sam Kerr.
Yeah, it might be, and you know, sometimes these awards have a knack of going with what they've done before. But again, I say the amount of goals and even this year, what she's been able to do has been remarkable. So I would love for her to receive it. I think it'll be a just reward for her. She's not only done it this year, but she's been at the top of her game for the last few years. And I think it'll be a great recognition for her.
An all-Melbourne grand final looks like it could be on the cards. There'll definitely be one team in the A-League grand final from Melbourne with Melbourne Victory and Western United in tonight's game. And if Melbourne City win the other semi-final against Adelaide United, then we'll have an all-Melbourne grand final. Amy Park has been the venue of choice and the venue of preference for both the clubs and the fans. And Melbourne Victory this season, who had played at Marvel Stadium before, have decided, I think in the last 2 years actually, to play just at Amy Park.
Yep.
If it is an all-Melbourne grand final, though, should the A-League push to try and get the grand final at Marvel Stadium or play it here at Amy?
Look, if it's a Melbourne City-Melbourne Victory final, I've been fortunate enough to play in two grand finals at Etihad Stadium, which it was called then, or what was it called? Telstra Dome back then.
Yeah.
And as a player, amazing. 55,000 people. It was one of the highlights of my career. Again, this is a fantastic stadium. You know, 33,000 full. I've been lucky enough to sit here, and I think we called one of the grand finals against Sydney FC here, which was amazing. If you can fill it out, I would love to see it at Etihad Stadium, a full house, 55,000 people. Again, depending on who makes it, but yeah, either stadium is fantastic. The atmosphere generated here at Amy Park is also second to none. You're on top of the ground. The players, they can feel it, they can sense everything. So either way, I'd love to say, look, more numbers. If you can fill it out, then I'd love to say we get 55,000 at Marvel Stadium.
And there's no AFL that day at Marvel either, so the window's open. There's a game the day after, but not on the Saturday, so the window's open. I like Amy Park as a football venue more. Yep. As a fan, watching it at Amy is more enjoyable. But if you can fill the stadium and if you can get the crowd for the grand final, and if it's a Melbourne Derby grand final, City and Victory, then yeah, maybe why not push for it? But I'm probably leaning more towards Amy Park for me personally, just as a fan. Liverpool is the quadruple on the cards. So they've won the two cups already, the FA Cup on the weekend.
Yep.
They won the League Cup earlier in the season, and there are still two titles, the two big ones that they're in play for, the Premier League and the Champions League, with the final against Real Madrid later this month. So is it a possibility? There's a bit of work to do in the Premier League, though.
There is, but look, the Champions League is definitely a possibility. They're in the final, so there's a 50-50 chance there. And the Premier League is, look, it's going to go down to the wire. I mean, City, it's not a certainty that they're going to get one over Aston Villa. You know, Stevie G will come back to haunt them and maybe help Liverpool snatch one. You know, they had a 2-2 draw the other night. They were pushed all the way. Yeah, so I'd like to think that it's possible. Again, I love the fact that they all play on the same day at the same time. I think that's unbelievable. I'd love to see that here. It's one of the beauties of sport overseas and in the EPL. You know, that last day when there's fans on their radios, on their phones, and we've seen it before. Yeah. You know, 1 minute they're all cheering, next minute the away team scores, and I think it could be a possibility. And you know, I won't put it out there that last minute, last day, anything could happen. So yeah, I'm thinking that it's possible for Liverpool to win the quadruple.
At the moment, Liverpool are 4 points behind Manchester City with a game in hand. They play in 7 hours from now against Southampton. So if you're thinking about getting up in the morning, I'd be thinking about jumping into bed soon. Maybe at the end of global game in about an hour from now. But they've got 4 points to make up on Man City. So a win tonight/tomorrow morning against Southampton will bring Liverpool to 89 points. Yep. Manchester City's on 90 points. So Man City will have 1 point advantage heading into the final day. Plus, they'll have, well, right now they've got a 7-goal advantage, plus 72 Man City, plus 65 Liverpool. So Liverpool will have to try and stack some goals up against the Saints tonight, and then try and hope that Liverpool or Man City slip up against Villa and Liverpool get the win to win the title. But
yeah, I mean, CVG, you could just park the bus, couldn't he, or not, and just play for the draw and. If Liverpool
surely
get the
there's
win.
A bit, there's a bit of I probably can't say the word, but S-housery from Stevie G to help his old side over the line.
I'm just saying, you know, if the game's tight, if they get a lead, do you defend? I mean, I'm sure he's a true professional, but mm-hmm. He's a Liverpool legend. He's a scouser. He's, you know, get a draw. It's no disgrace drawing with Man City, and then you just happen to help your former side clinch the title. Anything's possible.
In a nutshell, VAR, have we figured it out? Have we distilled it, or are we still not an idea?
I haven't figured it out, and I, yeah. If I could make it disappear, I would. Again, I'd take the human error any day over VAR because, again, we've spoken about it a million times, and you watch the video, everyone sees it. The ref goes down. It takes 4, 5, 6 minutes. And it's obvious to everyone, and they still get it wrong. So, you know, I'd like to see it scrapped, but I don't think it will. I think it's here to stay.
And finally, Dwight York this week was announced, or over the weekend, was announced as the new boss of MacArthur in the A-League. Ante Milicic vacating the spot after two seasons in the role. And now Dwight York, who's going to be the coach of the A-League All-Stars against Barcelona, will take over MacArthur next season. Is it the right appointment or is it a disappointment? Has he coached anywhere before?
I'll give you a one-word answer and I'll say disappointment. And yeah, I'll elaborate a little bit more. I mean, he hasn't coached anywhere before that I know of. Mm-hmm. The All-Star game will probably be his first coaching gig. And then to give, you know, an unknown, yes, he was a fantastic player, pedigree. Shouldn't we be looking at our own backyard, give someone an opportunity? But yeah, I think it's MacArthur's made a really big call now. Really big call.
Yeah, all right. There you go. 0433981116. The A-League is maybe a question to ask the listeners. Is the A-League, are we going to look at the A-League as a breeding ground for coaches down the track? Do you like this move from MacArthur to appoint Dwight York? We'll get your thoughts. 0433981116. Tony is it North Baldwin? Tony, welcome to the program.
Hi, boys. How are you going?
Good, thank you, mate. You want to chat about AC Milan?
Yeah. I just wanted people to, or just to interact about what they've achieved so far this year and what they could achieve on Monday morning. Like, they're top of the table, 2 points clear against Inter. Now, a lot of people, probably, you know, 30s and above, will look at that in the paper or look at that online and think, oh, yeah, here's a European superpower returning to their past. But it's not that at all. Like, that, their budget, what Paolo Maldini has done on a shoestring budget, it's easily the smallest of any of the European giants, the smallest of the top four Italian teams, and even one of the smallest of the Seven Sisters in that league. And when it's a small budget, it's a skinny squad, and they've copped their injuries, and they've just managed just to keep, you know, I won't say Inter at an arm's length, but they've kept them at a small distance, and like they, it's almost dare to dream kind of stuff on Monday morning. Like I want people to understand like what a caretaker coach. Also, you know, Pioli stepped in a year and a half ago as a caretaker. And he's just taken what he's managed to do with that squad has been, I think, one of the stories of European football in the last year and a half.
I agree. So they've been a traditional powerhouse in Italy, but they've been in the wilderness for the best part of the last decade or so while Juventus have dominated Serie A. There's been a lot of mismanagement there with administration, a lot of funds that have gone in different directions which haven't benefited the squad. And the fact that they've come back this season, and both Milan teams, I beg your pardon, who are both at the top of the table, Inter haven't had quite the same amount of mismanagement from the admin as AC have, but to see them both at the top and sort of restoring that football pride in Milan has been great, particularly AC.
It's been fantastic. And you mentioned that name, Maldini. It's synonymous with that club. His father was a huge figure in that club. His son now is playing at that club. And I was a huge Milan fan. I'm 40 plus years old, so I grew up with the Milan where the days had international players, and they had the three Dutchmen and, you know, Baresi's and Maldini's and Costa Curta. And you had international superstars playing, whereas now it's a totally different side. But what they've been able to achieve in, for me, still one of the best leagues in the world is remarkable.
Paul is in South Morang and wants to chat about the MacArthur Bulls. Paul, welcome.
G'day, guys. How are you?
Good, thank you. What are your thoughts?
Look, I don't know whether the Federation in some way got involved in the appointment of Dwight York to try and attract some form of support for MacArthur, but I purely think they're flogging a dead horse at the end of the day. it's sad to say, but When there's MPL3 clubs like Preston, for example, getting bigger crowds than some of the A-League teams, it's pretty disappointing from an A-League perspective. I mean,
I 100% agree. I 100% agree with you. It's a really good question you throw up there. Have the FA got involved? He's coaching the All-Star team. Now, off the back of that, he's coaching an A-League team. It's really disappointing. There's plenty of good coaches here, and you look at the coaches that we've got now. Like, you look at your Paddy Kisnorbos, who's done an apprenticeship, who's been very successful with Melbourne City. Your Muskies, who's done well, gone on to do other things. Aloisi is an Aussie coach. You know, I think we need to be giving our own coaches an opportunity, and MacArthur's taken, in my opinion, a huge risk with the appointment they've made.
The FA might fall back and say, well, we've had Paddy Kisnorbo and we've had Kevin Muscat in the past, and we've got Warren Moon and Carl Vitt and all these great Australian coaches. I mean, we've got Australian coaches up and coming through the A-League, so what is one coach to the rest of the Aussie coaches who have already started to forge a path? The global game here this Tuesday night, live from Amy Park in the aftermath of Melbourne Victory's 1-0 win over Western United. Jordan Cornelis and Roddy Vargas with you. We'll come back on the other side of this. We'll recap tonight's action. Some of your text messages too. 0433 98 11 16. Returning after this. Welcome back to the global game. Mike from the Gold Coast says, Simon and Broski, you two sound different.
Who sounds better? Nah, Simon Hill. I love Simon Hill. Yeah. One of my favourites, seriously.
Absolutely.
The best. I love his tone. You know what? My wife actually loves how he talks, his tone. I'm like, true professional. Love him. Love everything about him.
It's Jordan Cornelis and Roddy Vargas with you. I'm probably the underwhelming part. Roddy's a known name in football circles. I'm the who's that? That's me. I'm in the generation of Simon was part of my football upbringing.
Yep.
Like I was 10, I think, in the 2005
when 2005 happened, the Uruguay game. So yeah, that was part of my upbringing. Thank you for the lovely commentary. It was excellent from you two. It says Muzza from Geelong. Thank you, Muzza. T-Rex from Pangaea says, like the name, how would you two feel about Harry Kewell returning to Australia to coach in the A-League? Is he good enough or should he start in the NPL?
Whoa. No to starting in the NPL. I think that'll be a bit of a disaster. Look, I think he's battled away in the lower leagues in England. He's invested time. He's done his licenses. Whether he comes back and is this the right time for him to come back and coach? I'm not sure. I mean, he's come back as a player. You know, he played a few years here and at Victory and at Melbourne Heart. That's a really good question, actually. Would he want to come back? I think that's the first question. Would he want to come back here and coach?
I don't quite have the grasp on the timing. Based because that's sort of more personal to him. If he feels like the time is right for him to come back to Australia, I know he likes living in England. He's obviously had a massive long history in England with his wife and his life. And as far as coaching in the NPL, I think coaching in the Football League of England is probably good enough. You don't need to coach in the NPL. What would he coach? Yeah. NPL New South Wales or NPL 2 Victoria or NPL Queensland. I mean, he's done enough to coach in the lower leagues in England to give him a base.
Yeah,
to coach in the A-League.
Yeah, there'd be no reason or no need for him to come and coach at NPL level. But again, whether he wants to come here, and I think he very much likes to be in Europe where he is and close to everything. And he's still a huge name in Europe and in England. So, you know, good question, though. Not sure if he's ready to come back yet.
John in Campbelltown says, Sam Kerr's won all the awards in England this season. Players Association, Football Writers Player of the Year. Most competitive league in Europe, if not the highest quality. Scores big goals in big games. She's the only choice for the Ballon d'Or. Says John. Can Roddy tell us what's happened? So Roddy's in charge of the Melbourne Victory youth team. What's happened to Lambiris, Lepanku and Ishak from Melbourne Victory?
Okay, can we start again? Lambiris?
Lambiris.
Lambiris has stepped away from football. Again, he's got to an age where he's had to sort of make a decision. What people don't have to understand is a huge commitment on these young players at academy level. I mean, I'm talking even 14, 15, 16s, the under 23s as well. They're in 4 or 5 days a week. A lot of them have work. And again, it's a really tough decision for some of these players where they have to consider, is this something that I really want to dedicate the next year, the next 2 years to? The window of opportunity, the likelihood of me making it to the A-League, we know the numbers aren't great, so he's stepped away from the game, and I think he's considering or focusing on his studies, which, again, you can't deny a young player making that decision. I'm sure it would have been a tough decision for him. He has recently been involved in the FFA Cup with Melbourne Victory, so unfortunately for us in the game, he's stepped away from the game. The other two were...
Was it Lepanku?
Lepanku's coming back from injury, so he's training at the moment. I saw him last night. On the training ground, so he's working his way back to fitness, which is great to see again. He was one that was heavily involved in the FFA Cup run in the earlier games with a lot of the younger players, so he's working his way back into fitness, which is great to see. And the last one,
Ishak
has decided again to make a move away, and again he's continuing to play. He's moved on to Preston Lions Football Club. And funnily enough, his first game for Preston was against Melbourne Victory, which was a 0-0 draw. But again, same boat. I don't think these decisions are ever made lightly from players that have invested so much time and effort. And Ishak is a player as well that was involved in the FFA Cup, you know, got to travel, was part of the first team. And again, these decisions are made, you know, hopefully for the best of the player. They're big decisions, and they invest so much time and effort into this thing, you know, wanting to become professionals. And sometimes taking a step backwards for them is the right move, and really realizing, is this what I want to be? Do I want to be a professional footballer, or am I happy playing my trade in NPL and working and, you know, being content?
Yeah, I remember having a chat to you about this off air once, just about the hours that they put in. They go from football to school to football, and they've got 12-hour days, and they're, what, 14, 15, 16 years old. That's a
big commitment. Like, some adults don't work that much.
It's a huge commitment for all the young aspiring players that are in all the academies, all the A-League academies around Australia. I'm assuming we're in the same boat. I mean, overseas, I know in South America and probably in Europe, the kids that are at big football clubs and that are at a school age are doing their football and their schooling during the day. Mm. Unfortunately, we don't have the infrastructure, we don't have the money, we don't have the means at in this point of time where our kids do a full day of school from, let's say, 8 till 4, and then they're training in the evenings from 5. My group start at 7 and finish at 9, so they're spending 12 hours a day at school training and they're doing it over and over again. It's a huge commitment for these young players.
And last one here. Any tips on convincing a parent on why I should go to Adelaide for a football match? Come on, you City boys, 3-1.
Can you repeat that?
Any tips on how to convince my parents to head over to Adelaide? I'm assuming for tomorrow's first.
Oh, they're a Melbourne City fan.
Yeah, come on, you City boys, 3-1.
Oh, just it would be a fantastic experience. I think if you tell your parents, we'll do a road trip. I think Adelaide's only 8 hours. Hop in the car, do a road trip. Parents can see the sights, go and see Mount Gambier. There's a few nice lakes in Adelaide and get to watch your football team and, you know, be on your best behaviour and hopefully you can watch a home final against Victory.
Excellent stuff. Roddy, it's been a pleasure tonight.
A lot of fun. Thanks again, Jordan.
Been good fun, I reckon. Well, Broski's position is safe on Global Game, but maybe they'll make it a 3-man show and bring you in as well.
I'm happy doing what I'm doing at the moment.
Get the Melbourne angle in. Tonight from Amy Park here, Melbourne Victory had a 1-0 win against Western United. Some more from the Global Game on the other side of this, where we'll have a chat to Spencer Pryor next to talk all things English football. Michelle Escobar will join us to go a little deeper on the women's game, and Paul Williams as well to cover off on what's been happening in Asia and what will happen to the Asian Cup with China withdrawing from the hosting duties for the 2023 edition in 12 months from now. All that and more coming your way on the Global Game after this. Welcome back to the Global Game this Tuesday night on SEN. We continue on for the next hour here talking all things football after the first leg of the semi-final between Western United and Melbourne Victory on SEN, which you heard just a moment ago. We're going to chat all things Global Game here. So as the show is called, we've done our Australian football segment. We'll do Asia later on. But off the top of this hour, it is time to head over and chat about English football with a man who's in Australia but has spent a lot of his time in England, in the Premier League and down in the Football League as well. Spencer Pryor, who's part of the regular team on the Global Game. But my first chance speaking to Spencer. Spencer, it's good to chat. How are you?
I'm very, very good. Always looking forward to a good weekend of Premier League football and exciting at both ends of the table. So, yeah, really excited.
Absolutely, absolutely. The weekend ahead is going to be massive. There's been games this morning and a game tomorrow morning, which we'll chat about as well. But let's lead off with the maybe the big event from the weekend in English football, the FA Cup final between Liverpool and Chelsea. A tight game, went to extra time and penalties, and Liverpool were the team who came out on top, winning in sudden death penalty shootout. What did you make of the final overall?
Yeah, look, I think obviously with what's gone on with Chelsea this year, it was a monumentous occasion and a chance for them to tie up some silverware. It wasn't to be Liverpool again. I mean, I've spoke to Simon and that about it. I think it's the best Liverpool team we've seen for many a year, actually. And they showed super resilience to get the result. It wasn't a thrilling game, but it was just a real grind, and that's what Liverpool did. And it doesn't matter how you win the trophy. No one really cares if it goes to penalties. It's just the fact that their name will be on it. So they deserve it for the performances they've put in this year.
Chelsea, their season overall, so as you said, it hasn't been the best of season. It fell away a little bit through the mid portions of the league and out of Europe as well. Was the FA Cup, was that kind of the one thing that they were still sort of really gunning for in the back end of this season now? Was this the one thing they were trying to hang their hat on?
Well, look, I think the key for them was securing Champions League football, which they did overnight with Arsenal getting beat. But, you know, that would have been the key thing for them. But then, you know, after they fell out of the Champions League, yeah, of course, securing Champions League football for next year and then focusing really strongly on the FA Cup. Managers can get the sack if they don't pick up silverware, but Tuchel's done an incredible job given the circumstances. So, look, it's been a very, very difficult time for them, but, you know, Liverpool are just by a cut above, actually. So, no, deserved team one.
Yeah, the penalty shootout itself, Sadio Mane with an early miss for Liverpool. Alisson saved Mason Mount's penalty, and then Kostas Tsimikas, the Greek fullback, scored the winner. For Mason Mount missing the penalty, it's not the FA Cup is still a very prestigious trophy, not as big a stage as the World Cup. However, if you want to draw parallels to Bukayo Saka and Marcus Rashford, Jadon Sancho in the World Cup for England, but still for a young or youngish player, Mason Mount, he's been cemented in the starting 11 for Chelsea for a little while now. But for him as a young player, how much do you think that miss will weigh on him?
He won't care. He's 23 years old. He's captain the side. He's won the Champions League for Chelsea as well. So, yeah, look, people saying he's lost six finals. I think, the kid's 23 years old, got an incredible future ahead. So I don't think that will weigh too much on his mind. He'll bounce back quite quickly.
For Liverpool, their next fixture is coming around pretty quickly. They've got Southampton tomorrow morning. It's 4:45 a.m. Australian Eastern Time for all of you wanting to get up and watch it. So a quick turnaround to a midweek game, but one that it means a lot to them, obviously in the chase for the Premier League title. But especially after Man City dropped points on the weekend to West Ham, so this is an absolute must win against Southampton.
Well, more importantly, I mean, we've given Man City's result, as you said, it is a must win, because if they don't, even if they get a draw, goal difference, it comes down to goal difference then, and they're almost a country mile behind now in terms of goal difference from Man City. So, yeah, must win. We'll start the game incredibly high tempo, a bit like they've done most games recently. Super high tempo to start the game. Try and kill it off early. See if they can make a few changes, fresh, keep everybody fresh for going into the weekend. So, Southampton won't be easy, but you would expect Liverpool to go and win this game, taking it to the last day. And look, it's not in their hands at the moment, so all they can do is try and win their games. See if they can put a bit of pressure on Man City to see if something unexpected can happen against Villa.
Yeah, final day, Man City against Aston Villa, Liverpool at home to Wolves. This is Man City's to lose, though, isn't it?
Oh, very much so. Very, very much so. So, I mean, look, they were 2-0 down against West Ham. Liverpool fans would have been dancing in the street and in front of their tellies. A real character shown from Man City to come back to 2-2, Mahrez missed the penalty at the end, which could have really sealed it, but wasn't to be. So, again, it was a real grind and a great grinded out draw in the end. And West Ham was always going to be a very tough place to go. They've had an incredible season at West Ham. David Moyes has done an incredible job. And I was pleased with the result in the end. It's actually a decent result for him to grind that out.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, West Ham did look like, their season has been exceptional by their standards this season. So that did appear as the one possible banana peel for Man City in their run home. And now we look at that, obviously, with the title race and also how the rest of the top four will play out. And this morning's result for Arsenal might have maybe sealed it for Tottenham. It's still Arsenal, they can still take a top four position in the final day of the season if they win and Tottenham lose. But that was would you class that as a shock result this morning, Spencer, with Arsenal going down 2-0 to Newcastle at St James Park?
Yeah. So Tottenham are away at Norwich. I don't think they'll be quaking in their boots to go to Norwich and try and get a win. So, like you said, Arsenal have done the Spurs and kind of slipped up when you would have expected them to go and get a result. Newcastle were an incredibly strong team now under Eddie Howe. He's really turned them around from when he took them over. It'll be disappointing for Arsenal. You would expect they'll win their last game, but I'm banking on probably Tottenham to go and beat Norwich at Norwich. It's been a tough season for Norwich this year, long, long season. And yeah, they've been scrapping away. I'm sure they won't just cave in against Tottenham, but you know, Conte's got them really, really going hard towards the end of the season, and they've been digging in and getting good results. So, you know, when he took over, he would have been pushing and expected to get Champions League football. So, yeah, look, my money will be on Tottenham still finishing in the top four.
On the balance of the season, and obviously the table speaks for itself, but just from your impressions of either side this season, who would you have liked to see more in the top four and playing Champions League football next season, Spurs or Arsenal?
Well, look, I think the thing is with Harry Kane, you know, he gave one more season to Tottenham. Maybe didn't want to, but he was kind of forced into it. And I'll be pleased for him if he can see him and get in there. I mean, he obviously missed out on a Man City deal who now have gone and signed Haaland. So, I think across the course of the season, I would probably prefer to see Tottenham get in there than Arsenal. Mm-hmm. Nothing against what Arteta's done. I think he's been revolutionary in terms of his first season managing in the Premier League. But, you know, I think Tottenham, you know, I think they've got a slightly bigger budget, but it's a real scrap between them. And it's not surprising. It's gone down to the last day, actually.
And we'll finish off by chatting about the championship. And we've got the playoffs on at the moment with the playoff final at Wembley to come up shortly. But before that, Nottingham Forest lead 2-1 ahead of their home leg against Sheffield United in the second leg of their playoff semi-final. I'd love to see Nottingham Forest back in the Premier League. I'm a little young to remember when they were in the first division last, but I know of their history and I know of the love that they've garnered over the journey. So, Nottingham, are they your pick to make the? Would you like to see them make the Premier League again?
I used to play for Derby, so not really. No, to be fair, I mean they've done a fantastic job this year. The fans have really got behind them. So of the sides left in, look, Huddersfield have gone through, obviously. So whoever goes will play Huddersfield, and you know they've come down from the Premier League. It's been a tough couple of years since, but yeah, Forest will be very firm favourites to go up. And you know they do deserve another crack at it, so it'll be good to see Forest back up there.
Yeah.
I won't lie, but as a Derby supporter, I'd obviously be disappointed.
What would their promotion mean for English football if they were to get into the Premier League, Nottingham?
Oh, it's been a long time since they've been in there, so it'd be interesting to see then how they go and invest and what sort of budget they spend to try and stay in the division. It's always a real challenge, you know. We've seen with sides like Derby and Norwich that have gone up, Leicester to a certain extent a few years ago, getting relegated. So, look, I think first step is to get up and then go from there.
Spencer, it's been a pleasure chatting to you on the program today, and I know we'll hear your voice again with Simon when he's back on the program. But in the meantime, enjoy the football to come up this week.
Lovely. Take care. Cheers.
Spencer Pryor with us here on the Global Game this evening. On the other side of this, we'll chat women's football with Michelle Escobar. Paul Williams will cover off on what's been happening across the Asian continent as well. And Greatest Games will finish us off for this hour here on the Global Game this Tuesday night. This Tuesday night, it's the Global Game here from Amy Park. Jordan Canellis filling in this evening for Simon Hill. He'll be back again next week. Time to chat women's football, and Michelle Escobar is with us here on SEN. Good evening to you, Michelle. How are you?
Good evening. Good, thanks. Thanks for having me on.
Women's football, we're hitting a peak at the moment, particularly when we watch the deeds of Sam Kerr. She's had a big fortnight in women's football at the moment, and, well, on the weekend just gone, the FA Cup final, one for the ages as well. A couple of late goals and two goals for Sam Kerr to get Chelsea over the line to get the domestic double, the league and the cup. How impressive has this season been for Chelsea?
Oh, it's been a fantastic season for them, and Sam Kerr has been at the forefront. She's really turning into one of those clutch players and is cementing herself as the hero for the Blues. In terms of the club as a whole, they've continued their high quality football. They've won 5 of the 6 domestic trophies on offer over the past 2 seasons, which is massive. And although there's been a bit of drama off the field over who's going to take over from Roman Abramovich, I don't think that's really affected the women's team at the moment. We'll have to wait and see if when they finally do get a new owner, whether that's going to affect them for the seasons to come.
The club would probably look at this as the highest point of their season. I mean, with what's been happening off the fields, the men's team has probably let them down on a couple of key indicators this season, but the women's team have hit all of their objectives. So that's probably been the highlight of Chelsea's season as a club.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, they're doing very well. I guess it wasn't as, you know, the highest points as they could have, like last season where they made it to the Champions League final. But to keep that consistency going, and also they've had a few players out, like Fran Kirby hasn't been able to play because she's had an illness. And so for Sam Kerr to be able to continue that high form, even though she had that lethal partnership with Fran Kirby last season, it's still very impressive that they can keep that consistency up.
What's next for Sam Kerr? Is this just going to continue on for her at Chelsea, or what is there other goals maybe for her on the horizon?
For the time being, I do think that she will remain at Chelsea because she's really, you know, making a name for herself on the world stage at Chelsea, and everyone's taking notice. She's becoming one of the best players. Like I said before, she's turning into one of those clutch players that's turning up at the right time when she's needed the most, and she's just a hero for them. So I don't think she would be leaving anytime soon because, you know, she's showing her best at the moment, and hopefully she can bring that to the Matildas as well.
The women's season in Europe culminates this upcoming weekend with the UEFA Women's Champions League final with Barcelona and Lyon. And there's going to be an Aussie element to this because Ellie Carpenter has had a great season at fullback for Lyon. This is a big moment for her and also, I guess, for Barcelona as well. We don't want to just look at only the Aussie angle, but for Barcelona, they've been setting records, breaking records as far as crowd attendances go, and interest continues to swell in Spain. So this is it's all coming together to a nice point at the Champions League final this weekend.
Oh, it's going to be a massive game. You know, these are two heavyweights of the women's game. You've got Lyon, who have won a record 7 times. Barcelona are out of this world. Like you said, there's so many records that they've set and they've broken, all in a matter of weeks, really, with that crowd attendance. But it's going to be super interesting. And, of course, from that Aussie perspective with Ellie Carpenter, this will be the second time that she will be going for a Champions League trophy. She did win it before when she had just joined the club, but she has said that this one will be more special because, unlike the last time, she's played a big part in the campaign. So, but in saying all of that, as much as I would love to see an Aussie win the Champions League again, I just think that Barcelona will be too strong because they've just been phenomenal.
So that's this. That's on Sunday morning, this weekend in Turin at 3 a.m. Just on French women's football in general, it feels like, so while Europe have really had an overall boom in women's football over the last 5 or 6 years, were France kind of the first ones there? There are many great countries now with England and Spain and the Netherlands who are all magnificent and high up in the rankings, but France kind of felt like in Europe anyway, they were the kind of the first ones to really pioneer the women's game in a big way, in a big professional way. So it's kind of, do you sort of look at this final as the club representative of sort of the older school versus the newer wave of women's football?
Yeah, that's so true because, you know, when Barcelona were investing into their club in 2015, that's when Lyon was winning Champions League, along with the German teams as well, like Wolfsburg. And so, yeah, definitely Lyon represents the historical side of the women's game and how rich that has been, and then Barcelona, the newcomers, and it shows as well with Barcelona how important the investment is in the women's game, and the Spanish teams have actually done that very well.
Ange Postecoglou's big achievements in Scotland has been highlighted this week from the men's perspective, but Joe Montemurro has been replicating, if not bettering, I guess title by title, pound for pound, what Postecoglou's been doing in the women's game. Joe Montemurro, from what he was doing at Arsenal, he's now been able to basically do the same at Juventus in the Serie A now, winning the title this week. Is he one of Australia's, if not the number one Australian commodity in women's football right now. It's either him or Sam Kerr, I guess.
Yeah, they're two big names in the women's game, and he has done great things, and he showed that, you know, he's gone from the W League to the WSL to going to Italy and being able to be successful in all these countries. So he really is one of the best in the game, and hopefully he can continue that and perhaps in the future as well bring that to the international stage with the Matildas.
Do you reckon that's on the cards? Will the Matildas be? I'm sure they'd be eyeing him off.
I don't think so at the moment. I don't think there'll be a change. I don't think they'll be taking it off of Tony Gustafsson before the World Cup. But after, I definitely think that he's someone that needs to be considered because he's shown that he is top quality.
And before I let you go, Michelle, some closer to home news. The Afghan women's national team have been progressing through their first season in the lower leagues in NPL. They've been aligned with Melbourne Victory and coached by Jeff Hopkins, the women's A-League women's coach, is coaching the Afghan women's team. What's been the latest with the women's team? Have you been following their Afghan story?
Yeah, well, it's a lovely story that everyone wants to get behind, isn't it? They've been playing their first few games in the Women's State League, and it's And they have been able to do what they love in a safe environment, which is great to see. You know, their first game ended 0-0, but they've since gone on to win 10-0, which is massive. And they've been floating up there with being at the top of the ladder. Now they're currently third. And it comes just months after, you know, 30 players and coaches were evacuated from Afghanistan. As we all know, the Taliban took over, and women's sport now is almost non-existent again there. So this team is, yeah, they're over the moon being here, and it's great to see them being so happy in Australia.
Michelle, I appreciate your time again here on the Global Game this evening. Thank you for joining us, and enjoy the football coming up this week, particularly the Champions League final. Thank you.
Thank you. I hope you enjoy it too.
Michelle Escobar with us here this evening on the Global Game. We'll come back on the other side of this. We'll do a bit of Asian football with Paul Williams, and greatest game still to come later on.
It's time for Football Asia with Paul Williams.
Welcome back to the Global Game this Tuesday night on SEN. Jordan Canellis with you, filling in tonight for Simon Hill off the back of the first leg of the semi-finals in the A-League this week, which will continue on into the weekend, but keeping all of our regular segments intact for this night's edition of the Global Game. And it's time to speak Asian football with the Asian Games podcast host, Paul Williams, who's with us here on the program. Paul, good to speak to you again.
You too, Jordan. How are you going, mate?
I'm good. I'm very good. So I'm all the better for having a chat to you again on SEN, which is always a pleasure. let's get into the main topics around Asia and what's been happening across the continent that we're involved with. The Asian Cup coming up next year, and the hosting rights for the Asian Cup might be up for grabs again because of what's been happening in China. And I guess, is it all related to health and safety? What's the go with China hosting the Asian Cup in 2023?
Yeah, well, officially China is no longer the host of the 2023 Asian Cup. That was announced on the weekend. Officially, they withdrew from the hosting of that tournament. I suspect there was probably a little bit of pressure from the AFC involved in that as well. And this is something that, you know, I've discussed with Simon and Broski over the last couple of weeks. And the discussion's kind of been sort of bubbling underneath the surface in Asian football circles, that you look at everything that's happening in China, and they're still aiming for their COVID zero policy. And they've got strict lockdowns in a couple of their biggest cities. Talk that Beijing even might go into lockdown as well. And you look and think that they're meant to be hosting an Asian Cup in 12 months. And how are these two things compatible? And obviously, if they are going to look at stripping the hosting rights from China, then a replacement host needs to be given the maximum time possible. So it was coming to the point where a decision had to be made, and now a decision has been made. China is out. It now becomes a matter of what next, and where does it go to? I saw some people getting excited that perhaps Australia might throw the hat into the ring. I'm pretty certain and safe to say that that won't happen. I think Australia's got the Women's Asian Cup on the horizon, which will be taking all of their focus. My understanding and my gut feel over the last little bit, talking to Simon and Alex a couple of weeks ago, I think I mentioned it too, is that that'll go to Qatar. And it seems like the tournament will be pushed back to January 2024, just to allow for better weather. Obviously, it's pretty hard to hold a tournament in June and July in Qatar. So that seems to be the lay of the land at the moment. The question then also then flows on to what next, because the hosting rights for 2027 are going to be decided shortly. Qatar were bidding for that tournament. So assuming that they do get the 2023 tournament, that would pull them out of the running. And my understanding is that AFC can't give that tournament to anyone other than those that are currently bidding at the moment. China said that they're not going to try and get that as compensation, which leaves Arabia, India or Iran. And I'd be pretty certain, based on everything that's gone on, that that will be Saudi Arabia, which would mean three tournaments in the Gulf in a row after the UAE and likely Qatar in 2023.
Yeah, so with on Australia potentially hosting, you're right, it probably doesn't make a lot of sense given the Women's World Cup will be here around the same time next year. So venue availability just becomes so congested. And then Qatar, if you push the tournament back to the start of 2024, I guess logistically it gives you an extra 6 months to deal with the organisation of a tournament. Just buys them more time for the AFC.
It does. It gives them now effectively an 18-month lead-in, and I'm sure that will be announced shortly. I think there's an AFC Congress taking place this week. It might even be tonight that's taking place, and I'm sure that this will come up in the discussions, whether a decision is made at this one or whether that gets pushed to the next one. But I expect that an announcement will be pretty forthcoming pretty shortly on who that replacement will be. And I'd be pretty surprised if it's not Qatar. I mean, it makes perfect sense there. They've got all the infrastructure in place because they're hosting a World Cup in 6 months' time. They've hosted so much content within Asian football over the last couple of years that they can do it at the drop of a hat. They've got pretty good at doing this stuff on short notice. So I'd be pretty surprised if that's anywhere other than Qatar.
News around our national sides in the last week that Tony Vidmar is taking over in charge of the Olyroos ahead of a new Olympic cycle. So he's got the team for the next, at least 4 years, you'd imagine, with a tournament coming up on the horizon as well, the Under-23 Asian Cup next month in Uzbekistan. Tony Vidmar, he's been around the system for a little while, hasn't he?
He has, yeah, and I think it's a fantastic appointment. As you said, he's been around the system for a long time and almost doesn't get brought up in discussions around, future coaches, whether that be for A-League jobs or even for the national team. He's been an assistant for a long time. So it's fantastic to see him get this opportunity. He won't lead the Olyroos to this AFC Under-23 tournament because it clashes with the Socceroos and World Cup qualifying playoffs. And obviously, he's still got business to finish there. So he won't lead the team to that, but it's a pretty exciting appointment because it's a good generation of Olyroos players that we've got coming through. If you think of the likes of, Marco Tilio, Stefan Kolakowski, Mo Touré, Garan Kuala, who's now come through at Central Coast as well. So there is an exciting crop of players coming through that he gets the chance to work with. It's a shortened cycle, obviously, because the Olympics last time got pushed back a year. So it's only a 3-year gap between Tokyo and now Paris. And I guess that starts next month with the under-23s. It'll be really interesting to see how the different teams approach that. This one isn't Olympic qualifying, so teams tend to take slightly different approaches. Some teams will send a young team that they intend to take them all the way through to Olympic qualifiers. Others will send sort of the oldest team that they're able to do and go all out and get the win. So you kind of get to see some different results and maybe some upsets along the way because a lot of teams take different approaches. It'll be interesting to see how the Olyroos fare in that one.
What's the expectation, I suppose, for the Olyroos now? Because their previous best at the Under-23 Asian Championships was in the previous edition when they finished third, qualifying for the Olympics. The first time we've done that since, I think, Beijing 08. So there's been a bit of an upswing for the Olyroos. What are we expecting from next month in Uzbekistan and then for the Olympics ahead?
Yeah, as I said, it's sometimes hard to get a read on these tournaments because we just don't get to see, the under-23 national teams a lot in action. A lot of, nations do play regular football. You just don't get to see the matches and get a sense of how these teams are faring. And as I said, particularly with this tournament next month, teams will take different approaches, so you can't even necessarily read into the results we're going to see next month and try and extrapolate what that might mean for qualification for Paris 24 as well, because of that different approach. So I would expect the expectations for Australia, as I said, because of this generation of talent that we've got coming through, that with the greatest of respect is probably better than the generation that took us to Tokyo last time. The expectation should be the same, that we qualify for Paris in 2024.
Let's have a look at the J League to finish off here, Paul, with the season taking taking interesting shape, I guess, with Vissel Kobe, who I know you spoke to Simon Hill about last week, and Broski on the program. Iniesta's team in the drop zone at the moment. How have they been faring recently?
Awfully, to put it bluntly. But in good news for them, they actually finally got their first win of the season. Remarkably, they went their first 11 games without picking up a win, which for a team that was meant to challenge for the title this season is simply remarkable. They got a 4-0 win at home against Sagan Tosu, which is a pretty decent result because Sagan Tosu are in the top six. So that's a great result. What will probably satisfy and impress them the most is the names that were on the score sheet: Yuya Osako, Yoshinori Muto, Iniesta as well. So they're three big stars all found the back of the net. You'd like to think that perhaps that could give them some confidence going forward, but then they turn around tomorrow night and have to play Kawasaki Frontale, who are the three-time defending champions and right at the pointy end of the table again. So they could come crashing back to earth pretty quickly after their first win.
And Kevin Muscat, another season in charge of Yokohama F. Marinos. How's that side been travelling so far through the first, 12 or 13 games we've played so far?
Yeah, and they're the complete opposite. They've been purring along, really. Their start to the season has been exceptional. They had to cram in a lot of games because they obviously had the AFC Champions League that they had to contend with as well. So they crammed in more games at the start of their season to make up for what they were going to miss, and they've started exceptionally well, had a 4-1 win over the weekend, and they've come back from their trip to Vietnam for the Champions League and haven't missed. But it's been a really impressive start for Muscat. I've written a little bit now that there was probably a little bit of pressure coming in because their finish to last season was a little bit inconsistent, and there were some murmurings that perhaps, you know, what we'd seen under Ange wasn't going to continue. And, you know, was, you know, Muscat up to, you know, getting the best out of this team, and he's showing that he's certainly capable of doing that. And they've got a game in hand of Kashima Antlers, who are top of the table, and they're only 4 points behind. So they play that catch-up game tomorrow as well. If they win that, they're a point off top and they are flying.
And then a look around to the rest of the league, and maybe a look at the Aussies around the rest of the J1 league, Mitch Langerak and Nagoya and a couple of others. So where are we looking for an Aussie watch in the J league?
Yeah, so Adam Taggart's come back in for Cerezo Osaka recently, coming off the bench in their last four games. They actually played Nagoya Grampus on the weekend, who themselves were struggling. Hadn't been the best start to the season for Nagoya. They had a new coach, had an interrupted preseason with COVID, and I think they were struggling to come to terms with the new tactics, the new formation, and that had left Mitch a lot more exposed than what he had been in previous seasons. So his, you know, cheat record that he'd smashed in the last two seasons probably isn't going to be under threat this season. But they played Cerezo on the weekend. They got a 1-0 win. He kept that clean sheet, in part because Adam Taggart missed an absolute sitter from about 30 centimetres out, managed to not get his foot on the ball and put it into an open net. So that's a moment that Adam Taggart would like to forget, but I'm sure Mitch is very thankful as he looked back.
Paul, it's been a pleasure talking to you tonight on the Global Game, and I'm sure, I know Simon will speak to you again over the course of the next couple of weeks when he's back in the chair, but thank you for joining us tonight on tonight's program.
Cheers, mate. Appreciate it.
That's it for the Global Game tonight here on SEN. It's been a pleasure filling in for Simon Hill and Alex Brosk, who'll be back again next week, next Tuesday night from 9 p.m. And there might be a big guest on the way. So keep an eye on the Global Game on sen.com.au, where you can podcast the show, and on all of the social media channels. But thanks for keeping us company tonight here in the aftermath of the first leg of the semi-final between Melbourne Victory and Western United. A 1-0 win for Melbourne Victory, and off to the second leg they go on the weekend, Melbourne City and Adelaide tomorrow on SEN. Good night from the Global Game tonight. Simon and Broski back next week.